My dad has always said, I'm not going to leave you money, I'm going to leave you debt. Because giving you a fish, you will eat that, but giving you fishing gears and actually teaching how to fish is a long-term strategy for him.
This is Salty Plum Stories and I'm Nicole Brown. I'm a proud Larrakia woman and my people have lived in Darwin, or Garamilla as we call it, for tens of thousands of years. Did you know, from Darwin, it's quicker to fly to East Timor than it is to Sydney? East Timor, or Timor-Leste as it's known, is an island surrounded by coral reefs and is the birthplace of the amazing Connie Jape.
Hello, my name's Connie Jape. I'm from East Timor. From a little village called Mabara that is about an hour away from Dili. It's a very small village by the seaside. It's probably have, you know, a dozen houses. I remember my dad and my grandpa have the only fridge in the village.
Like many countries around the world, the East Timor community has a diverse cultural mix due to migration and colonisation. The indigenous peoples of Timor are of Malayo-Polynesian and Papuan origin. The official languages are Tetum, which is an indigenous Timorese language, plus there are 32 other indigenous languages. Portuguese, Indonesian and English are also common, along with Hakka from China, which is Connie's native language. Her ancestors are from the Guangdong province in southern China. Connie has 9 siblings, and there's a 24-year age gap between the youngest and oldest.
I'm number 8, so the second youngest daughter or the third youngest child. As a little girl, we used to go to my grandparents' place in Mabara, and my grandma used to sort of give us some pocket money to go and buy stuff from the market, and we'd just play around in front.
Connie's dad was always thinking about the future of his children, specifically their education.
And there was no school in Mabara, so he decided to borrow some money from grandpa and started his own business as a general store in Dili. My child's living in the shop front and the back. We basically have to climb over stock to get to the bedroom, and after school, that's our playground. You know, you can do hide and seek fairly easily, or you can do high jump by putting a broomstick across two equal height things, and that will be our playground. We sort of got brought up to Dili, and then whenever there is a holiday, we go back to the village and stay with my grandparents.
While on a visit to the village, things changed for Connie very suddenly.
There was just a message for us to actually hop on at the back of a truck, and me and my younger brother had to go back to Dili. And we didn't know why, we didn't know how. What was going on until we get to Dili. We're still none any wiser. Then we get sort of taken to all sorts of clinics to get our check up and have our vaccination done, none any wiser, until we were taken to a airport, and where we were pretty much put on a plane to leave Timor in December 1973. I remember arriving Singapore through Indonesia, and the first thing they said is, if you don't know how to use chopsticks, you're not having any food. So we had to learn that fairly quickly.
Connie already spoke Hakka and Mandarin, but her father, Kong Su Jay, wanted his children to go to school in Singapore to learn English as well. But it wasn't easy getting thrown into the deep end.
When I was in Timor, we were in Chinese school, so we learned Mandarin. But when I get to Singapore, it's a bilingual, and most of it is using English lingual to teach. And I think the 24 alphabet know me, but I don't know them. When I rocked up, I think I was in year three, and the first lesson was dictations, and I had no idea what I was doing.
While it was tough learning new languages, it was her father's dream to make sure his kids got a good education. To do this, he was growing his businesses. But then two things happened that changed everything.
A cyclone is imminent. We present this advice from the Darwin Weather Bureau and the Northern Territory.
Well, I guess in 1974, everybody know that Cyclone Tracy have destroyed Darwin and a lot of people had left. In 1975, Timor also have gone through a civil war.
It had been a long, painful path to liberation for the East Timorese. For almost five centuries, they were subjected to Portuguese colonial rule, only for the Indonesian armed forces to take over in 1975.
Indonesian forces invaded and declared that East Timor was a province of Indonesia. This is the civil war that Connie's talking about. Fighting continued for the next two decades, and it's estimated that over 100,000 people lost their lives. A wave of refugees fled to Portugal and Australia, including Connie's family.
After the war, a lot of Timorese have moved over to Darwin, including some of our relatives and things like that. Darwin's Hakka community was quite big. There was quite a lot of them. It's only after years later that they start moving south to Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane. Part of it is because the kids need to go to uni, so they start moving away from Darwin. So the Darwin Hakka community, Timorese community, was much bigger. There is two parts to the community here. The other part is the Portuguese Timorese communities, which is also, I think, do a similar thing where they have migrated south to different part of Australia and, you know, grow roots there.
After fleeing the civil war, Connie's family arrived in a city that was devastated by Cyclone Tracy. Connie's father saw an opportunity where others saw disaster, but it wasn't easy.
He lost a lot of money through the war. I remember they used to take a lot of skuru, which is the Timorese dollars, and he would say, well, you might as well use it to burn or for cooking because they're useless. But he came to Australia and the first thing he bought was a block of flat in Eden Street or some roof missing. And I remember the family squeezing into one of those. And, you know, so he restored them, sell them, rent them. You know, he's always looks so ahead and sometimes too ahead for us. We used to sort of laugh at him and say, can you slow down because we can't follow you. So he had a look at the city and he goes, well, there's really no shopping centres in here. So he decided in 1977 that he'll build one.
To fill an empty store in their shopping centre, Connie's family started importing furniture from Singapore.
Then in the late 80s, he happened to drive past Bagger Road. Those who know Darwin know that Nightcliff was like the edge of the town. And there's a very rowdy hotel, motel called a Dolphin. So he actually decided he'll buy that. So that's how we start with our furniture store, which is now, 46, 47 years old, the Homemaker Village, yeah.
Connie has vivid memories of the contrast between Darwin and Singapore.
Well, I guess because Singapore is a fairly strict sort of life, so coming to Darwin would be like a holiday of no rules and, you know, anything goes sort of thing. I still remember watching my nieces and nephew go to school without shoes on and we were absolutely mortified. But it was such a free feeling. And I remember every Friday night, my brother would took us to Woolworths to do the Friday night shopping. And that was always a treat because we get to go and buy, you know, the three colour ice cream. That was a treat for us. I still have a photo of my dad going to fishing in a river with mud up to his chest. I mean, you wouldn't even think about it these days. But I guess back in those days, that is the done thing. People used to don't lock the doors and everybody's friendly, fairly easygoing. It was a lovely place to live. The hardest thing for me is probably the language barrier. Yeah, so I do study English in Singapore, but it's not the language that I use to, you know, communicate. So it took me a while to get used to it.
The civil war separated Connie's family. Her grandparents fled to Taiwan, while one of her brothers stayed in Dili. Eventually, they all made it to Darwin, but her grandparents found it difficult to settle in.
My grandpa always said, you know what, when I got moved to Australia, I'm actually deaf, I'm blind, I'm muted because I can't understand things that people said to me. I can't speak the lingo. I can't, you know, communicate.
Connie's grandfather's experience and outlook was very different to that of Connie's father.
I remember him in Singapore when he was about 40, 50, and he used to take an English learning tape that he was learning the lingo at that age because he can speak Portuguese, you know, Hakka, Mandarin, and the native Tetum, and also English. So he was, you know, learning it at 50 years of age.
Kong Su's life motto was never give up, no matter how difficult the task may be. And it's that very motto that continued to drive the businessman from his humble beginnings in Timor to building an empire right here in the Top End.
It could be said that Kong Su Jay was a business visionary, yet he never forgot his roots in East Timor, giving back to the community by building a free medical centre.
Any Timorese people can go there and get treated for free. And also last year, he's gone back to Timor and finally delivered an administration building back to the Mabara people.
In 2014, he was recognised for his significant service to business and commerce in the NT and in Timor, awarded an Order of Australia in the Queen's Birthday Honours list.
Kong Su Jay passed away in 2022, but his legacy continues in the form of a foundation to help young East Timorese people.
The Fishnet Project is a training program for the young Timorese people. So we will fund their training costs. And once they actually gain employment, they will have to pay back the funds, so that the funds get regenerated to the next generations of younger people.
With 9 siblings and their children and grandchildren, these days the Jake family is almost as big as the little village in East Timor where it all began.
Those who know us know that we are a very close family. To have 100 people in a family that can live harmoniously is no mean feat. It's only because we value the family a lot more than materialistic things, and also live and let live. And I think it's important because, you know, everybody have different personalities and different likes and different feelings about things, and we just got to embrace that.
For Connie, this attitude goes beyond family into the broader community.
I think Darwin was always very multicultural with, you know, the Vietnamese, the Timorese, the Greek, the Italians, and now we added all the others, including, you know, Nepalese, Indians, and all these other people. So the community is even more widened. I always said, you know, to my staff and when they first start with me as well, multicultural is about embracing everybody's cultures and opinions and not to change anybody. That's to me is truly multicultural. You can continue with your, you know, religions or your rituals, but also embracing other people's. I think that's true multicultural for me.
A big thank you to the powerhouse Connie Jape for sharing her story. This was the last episode in season one of Salty Plum Stories. Thank you for listening. I hope to see you soon in Darwin, my beautiful Larrakia country. If you're interested in learning more about my people, the traditional owners of Darwin, search up Saltwater Stories of the Larrakia. I'd love you to take a listen. Salty Plum Stories is a City of Darwin podcast produced by Laura Uden and Cinnamon Nippard, with editorial support from Johanna Bell and mixing by Hamish Robertson. The incredible soundtrack was composed and mixed by Kuya James and Tutut Malut. For more information, head to the Discover Darwin website. I'm Nicole Brown. Thanks for listening.